Welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline D'Est, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. Women of Wasps and War, The Sting of Justice, a new historical fantasy novel by Madeline D'Est. Women of Wasps and War is a grim and gripping tale of power and politics, love and honour, men and women, the old ways and the new. Women of Wasps and War is now available on Amazon and Kindle Unlimited. To Write Through the Roof. I'm Madeline D'Est, and today I'm speaking with Claire Flynn. How are you going today, Claire?
I'm great, thanks, Madeline, and lovely to meet you, and thank you for inviting me onto your show.
Oh, my pleasure. A little bit of an introduction about Claire. So Claire is a historical fiction writer based on the Sussex coast. She's a former global marketing director, and she's published 9 novels and 1 short story collection, mainly set in the 19th and 20th centuries. And her latest novel, Storms Gather Between Us, is out now. Thanks again for joining me today.
Pleasure. Thank you.
All right, so how I like to start off, because it's a little bit colder here in Melbourne today, so a few warm-up questions, you know, some star jumps or some, you know,
Great.
So the age-old question, are you a plotter or a pantser?
Well, I think I would describe myself as an instinctive pantser who regularly tries to force herself to become a plotter, but I don't get very far with it. I even put myself on a university course to learn how to be a better plotter and to go basically the discipline of sitting down and writing an outline. And I did it. And then the moment I started to write, it was Adamie Dirtchie. And off I went, or rather off the characters went. And I just sort of had to follow along behind them. And I find that all the time. So I tend now, I suppose I'm a little bit of what some people call a plantser, in that I do try to have a few rough ideas before I start, some stakes in the ground and a little bit of a route map. But then I don't stress once I start to go off-piste. And I think that's a big improvement from how I started out, because my first book, A Greater World, which is set in Australia, I think that took me about 15 years to write. And when I sat down to start writing it, I hadn't a clue what it was about, other than it was probably going to be set in Australia. And so much of it changed as I went along. And I vowed after that I would try and get more disciplined. And I have, but certainly I would no way describe myself as a plotter.
Mm. Okay. So do you write every day?
I try to. I don't beat myself up if something else comes up to get in the way, but I would say generally most days, yes, I do write. I'm not one of these people that writes to an exact timetable. I tend to work better in the morning, but I also write in the afternoon and occasionally in the evening. I generally find it's what I want to do, so I don't have to beat myself up too much about it.
Mm, yeah, because some days the words flow and other days it's a little bit harder.
Yes. I think that's true of everyone. And when it is a bit harder, I've come to the conclusion that there are two solutions. One, just walk away, do something different, go for a walk, read a book, do something that just distracts you and then come back to it. Or if I'm really struggling against a deadline and I feel desperately stuck, I just sit there and say, you're not going to move until you start writing. Then it, you know, any old rubbish, just get it down. And then I generally find once that just breaks the ice, and once I get into it, it's not nearly as bad as I thought it was when I was starting to write it. And I'm very much an edit-as-you-go person. I go over and over. And I kind of enjoy that. I like switching from kind of being creative to being a bit more analytical. And I'm doing that in a more or less constant process. I also have a group of four other published writers who meet regularly. We meet every Friday afternoon, and we each submit in advance a piece of work, and then we give each other kind of really constructive feedback. That's another really helpful thing. And therefore, I guess the knowing that every week that's coming up, and I don't think I've ever had a week when I haven't submitted something. That's just me. I'm terribly, I have to deliver, I suppose.
Conscientious.
I'm conscientious. I did, I think the last 5 years I've done NaNoWriMo because I find that is a wonderful way to either kickstart a book or to just, to just really get those words down. And I don't think I've ever done it, try and write a book in a month. I've always used it to write, let's finish this book off with the, and I've always managed to do the 50,000 words in the month. So I think I'm a very competitive person. And even if the competition is myself, I'm up for it.
So when you do sit down to write, what's your writing fuel of choice?
A tea.
Yeah.
I do have, I will usually have one coffee during the course of the day, usually mid-morning, but most of the time it's tea and lots of water. And then, of course, once it gets to 1 o'clock... myself. That's usually as I've finished the actual writing part, and I'll just be reading through and editing and perhaps doing some research or some marketing. But yeah, tea is my main fuel.
Fantastic. So it sounds like we've got to know you a little bit better. So let's get a bit more in depth. So
okay.
How do you describe your writing, and what themes do you like to explore?
I would say I write most of my books are about displacement, and quite often that's a geographic displacement. I think my first three books were all involved people being taken out of their comfortable, familiar world and basically sent to another part of the planet to and having to pick up the pieces and adapt to a completely new way of life. And as well as it being geographical, I've also, in other times, it will be a displacement more of just moving out of the comfort zone and people being forced into circumstances that are a challenge to them. And I realized quite early on that this was a common theme, and no matter what I did, I couldn't seem to get away from it. And I think it probably traces to my childhood, because my father had a job that involved, he kept getting promoted and sent to different parts of the country. And back in those days, it was, and knowing his character, he didn't ever like to say, no, I'm not going to do that. So as a result, we were all uprooted, often as frequently as once a year. And that meant sort of plucked out of school, sent to a different part of the country, and forced to make new friends and basically start all over again. So I think it's kind of in my DNA now. So it's it comes naturally to me to write about that kind of thing. Obviously, I never did anything at that stage quite so dramatic as some of my characters. But even in my own adult life, you know, I've lived and worked in, I'm obviously from the UK, but I've lived and worked in France, in Belgium, in Italy, in Australia, and I've done a lot of travelling. So, and I can remember my first foreign assignment, I was sent to Paris, which is, you know, every girl's dream. But in actual fact, it was really, really tough leaving everything and everybody that I'd known and all my friends and having to start off in a new place in a different language. So I kind of understand that. So that's one major, major thing. I suppose also every single one of my book has some form of probably what I call a psychological theme. They'll deal with relationship problems. They'll deal with other forms of psychological issues. I've got people suffering from post-traumatic stress and post-war. That's a very common, it was a big theme in my novel, The Alien Corn, and to some extent in The Gamekeeper's Wife. I write about generally about the impact of war, how that affects so many people, how it changed women's roles, how it changed relationships, morality, all manner of things. Probably also I write about self-discovery. I think every single one of my characters is in a different place psychologically or emotionally at the end of the book from where they started at the beginning. So that's a very, and it takes different forms. You know, I've written about mental health, alcoholism. My latest book, Storms Gather Between Us, deals with bigotry, religious bigotry, and then all manner of forms of abuse. And I'm making it sound as if they're all.
But there's romance as well, isn't there?
Yes, there is. And I would say that if for hardcore romance readers, I'm probably not the right person because it's not just Hearts and Flowers and Happy Ever After. It's usually a pretty tough journey to get there. And in some instances, it's not the classic Happy Ever After. It's more of a what I'd describe as a perhaps a satisfying ending rather than a let's all walk hand in hand into the sunset. Although there's a lot of, I mean, I would say probably most of them, they do get what they want to get at the end, let's hope.
Fantastic. Okay, so the one big question that I like to ask is, what is the one thing that you think has been most helpful in improving your writing?
Gosh, that is, it's really difficult to pick one thing. There's so many. But I would say the number one thing above everything else is reading. And I think I've been blessed in that I first learnt to read when I think I was 4 years old, maybe even a bit younger. And my earliest memories are as a small child in Liverpool, climbing out of bed and reading, lying on the linoleum floor. And because we're talking, you know, 1950s Liverpool, things were not very luxurious, no fitted carpets. So I was lying on the lino floor, reading by the light that was coming under the bottom of the door from the landing. Mm. And my father at that time, it was before he went into business, he was a teacher and he taught me to read. And I just read everything that I could get my little hands on. And it wasn't so much that I was I stuck to any particular genre. I just loved to read. And I think that has been a tremendous help to me over the years because it just gives you a lot more breadth. It gives you a sense of how different writers have just different rhythms of writing and expressing. And yeah, I've just always loved it. And I think that it's like the fuel to the fire, really. So that would be my number one thing. But I think also I've learned a huge amount from I was blessed with having an excellent editor who I learned a huge amount from. And she was fearless in, you know, giving tough feedback when required, but also very positive, encouraging feedback. And I learned a massive amount from her that really kind of pushed my writing, I think, a bit further. So that I've never been one of those people who've thought, I write fast, but I don't think I've got to keep churning it out. You know, the big trend at the moment is you've got to get a new book out every month, or, as I heard the other day, every 2 weeks. Which, people say, oh yeah, you've got, if you want to be a success, you've got to publish every 2 weeks in order to ride the Amazon algorithms, and that just makes me shudder with horror, because I can't even conceive how you can get anything that's worthy of reading in that amount of time. You know, if you worked 24/7 for those 2 weeks, and you can't keep up that kind of pace. So,
and I find that it's the space that I have between the drafts that, you know, enriches it each time.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah, I think I've learned a lot. I learn a lot from my critique group, because they see things that I wouldn't see, or interpret things in a way I might not have interpreted them. So that's really helpful. And then the other thing I guess I do that really helps is I read aloud as part of the final process, so that, because to me, one of the things that I feel is incredibly important about writing a book that people will want to keep reading and will want to just don't want to move away from is that you're pulling them in by almost, it's a bit like a piece of music. It's got to have highs and lows and lights and darks. And I think you can only really get a strong feel for that when you read aloud. So I find that's an essential part of the whole process.
So are you trying any new techniques at the moment?
I am, actually.
Excellent.
I'm trying to write two books at once.
Oh.
Which is something I never thought I would do. And it's kind of happened by accident, because I started back in January, when after my Storms Gather Between Us was at the publishers, and I'd finished it and I was ready to start again. And I went off for 4 months on a round the world cruise. And my plan had been, I will use, there'll be so much time and I'll do a lot of writing. And so I started writing a book, which was, is a follow on to Storms Gather Between Us. And I just couldn't write it. I could not get motivated at all. And that had never happened to me. And it wasn't just, oh, I don't know what to put. I just didn't want to. So I beat myself up about it for about a week. And then I thought, Claire, you just need a holiday. So I stopped. And I didn't even think about it. I just enjoyed myself and did lots of reading. And I wrote up my travel diary and stuff like that, but I didn't try to write any fiction. And then just 2 weeks before I arrived home, suddenly I got this desperate urge to write, but it was another book, completely different. And so I got really stuck into that. And then once I got home, I carried on with that. And then the reviews for Storms Gather Between Us started to come in, and almost universally people were saying, oh, well, there has to be a sequel to this. There just must be. We've got to know. So I started to think about that, and then I wrote and I kept on doing it. And then I thought, what am I going to do? Which one am I going to write? And then I thought, well, let's try and do both. And what I've found is I'm flipping one day to the next between one and the other. And so far, I'm absolutely loving it. It means that I don't ever feel too stale, because I finish a little piece and then I think, instead of thinking, oh, well done, Claire, and then having to feel I need that little break before I write the next piece, the next morning I wake up and I think, right, get into the other book. And so it's always fresh. And it is helped, of course, by the fact that they are both in a similar period, both set around about the beginning of World War II, although in completely different parts of the world with and completely different characters. But some of the, at least the period and the sound of, you know, people's the things that were the issues that were troubling people are similar, although, you know, in a very different potential theatre of war. So, yeah, I'm finding they complement each other. So I don't know whether I'll ever do it again, but I'm certainly finding it very refreshing right now. And one of them will be finished before the other, I'm pretty sure, because I'm almost at 50,000 words with one and less than 20 with the other. So we shall see.
Fantastic. So you were talking before about how you like to read and how reading is very, very important. So what writers inspire you?
Gosh, that there are so many, Madeline. I still love, and, you know, I grew up on the classics. So I've always loved people like Thomas Hardy, George Eliot, the Brontes, Jane Austen. And I still enjoy every now and again going back and reading one of those. I grew up with a very varied diet of fiction. So I did read historical then. I loved Anya Seton and Jean Plaidy and people like that. I loved Agatha Christie, Mary Stuart. But at the same time, I was also reading, especially as a teenager, I read lots of the foreign classics, so books in translation. So, you know, the Russians, I read all of Tolstoy, I think. I loved the French novelists like Zola and who else? Gide. And I read a lot of American literature as well, even Australian. Obviously, I love the thought of it. So, yeah, you name it, I read it. And now I suppose I have to read. I like to try and keep up in my genre. I love books by I love Kate Atkinson, for example. I've just finished reading A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towle, which I absolutely adored. So, yeah, it's what, and I have to read a vast amount, I guess, as background research for my writing. So at the moment, I'm reading a memoir set in Malaya. I'm reading lots of books about World War II and the Battle of the Atlantic, and just general books on the history and times and geography of the areas I'm writing about. So, yeah, it's just I just wish there was more hours in the day to fit it all into. And I didn't get so distracted by social media and watch television news.
Well, tell us a little bit more about Storms Gather Between Us. So you've hinted about it a little way through the interview. So what inspired that, and were you trying anything new with that book?
Yeah, I guess I had until last year when I signed a two-book contract with my publisher, Canelo, I'd been entirely self-published. I'd started off with an agent, and despite her trying very hard, the book didn't sell. And I just decided to go to experiment going off on my own, and it paid off. So I was very, very happy and wasn't looking to, I never ever pitched to anyone. I didn't write query letters or anything. I just carried on writing and marketing my own books. And then these publishers approached me, and I thought, well, keep an open mind, Claire. So I met with them. And then we agreed to try a two-book contract, which consisted of the republication of my first novel, with the Australian one, A Greater World. And I committed to then write a follow-up to it. So Storms Gather Between Us is that. And what I did, and I'm writing this now, you know, 5-6 years later, or I wrote this 5-6 years later, but, and I didn't really want to go back at that point to the main characters. So I decided to take one of the secondary characters, who was the stepson of my heroine, if you like. And at the end of A Greater World, he, very disenchanted and lovelorn and distraught, rushes off to join, to try and get a passage on a ship and become a sailor. So I thought, why don't I go back and revisit him? Because I'd always had lots of feedback from readers that they really liked him as a character and wondered what had happened to him. So I took him forward, probably, I think it must have been about 10, 15 years, something like that. Can't remember exactly. And by this time, he's 30, a bit, let's say, happy to wander the world, woman in every port, rather cynical. Not like the sweet young teenage boy he'd been in the first book. And probably, and also still nurturing a rather tragic crush on his stepmother. So he became my main character. And then I also revisited another character who was just a small child, little more than a toddler in the first book, and her parents, who were, in fact, the parents were the trigger to my main character going to Australia. So it was basically going back and picking up some stitches and weaving a completely new story. And I set it in Liverpool, which is where I was born. And obviously also for a merchant sailor, it's the logical place that he's likely to wash up in, because all sailors at that time ended up at some point in their career in Liverpool. So that's and I the religious mania thing, in the first book, this one character was the seeds of that were already sown. It was clear that he was a bit of an evangelical. And I happened to, I don't quite know how it was. I think I was doing some research on biblical quotes, and I came upon a website. I can't remember what it's called, and I don't want to say anyway, because I wouldn't want to encourage anyone to visit it. It quite shocked me, the extremity of the views about the role of women and God's views on the role of women. It was American. And so I was fascinated and really sucked into this, because I couldn't believe that people in 2018, at the time I was writing it, could be could think this way. It seemed positively medieval. So I used that as an inspiration for developing a couple of characters within Storms Gather Between Us. So it is a love story. And yes, it's about two people who normally probably wouldn't have met, which is often the case in my books, but circumstances throw them together. and pull them apart.
So what I was wondering about there was coming back to write the sequel to a book that you said you'd written 5 or 6 years earlier. That would have been an interesting process, because I would have presumed that your writing may have changed or, you know, improved in those interim period, and how that might affect what you're writing.
Yes, I'm sure. I hope it has.
Yeah.
But that said, that first book is still one of my most popular books, and I still get lots of readers saying, this is my favourite of all your books. So it's not as if it was a book that I felt ashamed of. I think if I wrote it today, I'd write it differently. Mm. But I think it still stands up, and it still gets excellent reviews. So it was tricky because it was a long time ago, but I just, the first thing I did was sit down and read it again, which I had to do anyway, because it was going to be republished. And then just, I didn't follow it, because it was minor characters, it was away from Australia, completely different place. The biggest challenge, I guess, was how to convey the backstory without dumping it all at the beginning of the new book, and how to weave that through. And, you know, I'm finding that also an interesting challenge now in writing one of the books I'm writing now. Because I think there's nothing worse than either having a summary at the beginning saying the story so far, or, you know, just putting it in an undigested, here's what happened, or characters explaining in laborious detail to each other what's gone on before. So I'm trying to, that's the hardest bit about it. But I like challenges, it's interesting.
Fantastic. Well, sounds like you're a very busy woman, so I'll start to wrap up and let you get back to the two books you're writing at the same time. So if people are interested in finding out more about you and your work, where's the best place to find you online?
Well, my website is a very good start, and that's Claire Flynn, so Clare, I don't have an I in it, FLYNN.co.uk, or just Google Claire Flynn without an I, and you'll find it. And then obviously all my books are listed on my Amazon page. So again, if you go onto Amazon and put my name in, I'm also on all the lots of social media. I have a Facebook page, which is author Claire Flynn. I'm on Twitter and Instagram, and with both of those, I'm in a shortened version of my name. So I'm at Claire Fly, FLY. So
that's kind of cute. Yeah.
Well, I thought it was at the time, and then afterwards, because I started off on Twitter as Claire Flynn in full, and then I thought, oh no, it's wasting too many characters. So I switched to Claire Fly, and I thought it was cute. And then somebody said, oh no, you should never do that, you should have your full name. So I went back to reclaim it and found that somebody else had taken it, somebody who had never posted another thing, which was really annoying. But people find me.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Claire. That's been really, really interesting.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Madeline. Lovely to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to Write Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinedst.com or madeline_dst on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinedst.com under the Write Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?